Okay, we didn't design this service very well. That I have to get up after that and talk. That's a tough act to follow. Great job, guys. Great job. Well, while they're heading out, we are in the beginnings of our series for the summer called Pointing Forward. And in this series, we're going to spend time looking at Old Testament folks, people of God from the Old Testament. And while it's important to understand who they are and know their stories, the point of why we're learning about them is because all of them point forward to Jesus. And so last week we looked at the person of Abraham and how God chose him to leave his home, his country, his father's house, and go to start a new thing in a new place. We learned about how through a miracle birth of a child, God continued the hope for the world. We learned how this child eventually carried wood up a mountain for a sacrifice. All of those things point to Jesus and to the grace we have in him. This morning, we're going to spend our time in really honestly one of my favorite Old Testament sections, the book of Ruth. I love this book. I love the deep theology of Ruth. So if you want to join me this morning, if you have a blue Bible, we're going to start with Ruth chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. I'm on page 210 in the blue Bible, Ruth chapter 1. So just to set the stage, there's a point at which Moses led the people out of Egypt. Joshua led them across the Jordan River into the Promised Land, but they did not have a king yet, so they had what were called the judges. Okay, it was a very turbulent time for the people of Israel. Here we go. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. Okay, I just wanted to read those verses to set the stage. Now, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story because we don't have time to read four chapters. But it's pretty amazing that this story is told in four chapters. So here's what's happened. Naomi and her daughter-in-laws are left there without any men. All the men have died in their family. So Naomi hears that God has returned to Judah and given them food and blessed them again. So she decides she's going to return to Bethlehem, to her hometown. And so she gets ready to go, and she says to the girls, hey, just stay here, stay with your own families, just stay. But they both want to go with her. So they set out for Bethlehem, but at some point, Naomi says to them, look, what are you going to do? Even if I got a husband right away and gave birth to twin boys, would you wait for them to grow up to marry them? You should go home. I have nothing to offer you. So Orpah, with great tears and great heartbreak, turns around and goes back to Moab. But Ruth utters these phrases. Nope, where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my people. Where you die, I'll die. And so Naomi realizes she can't convince Ruth not to go. So they come into Bethlehem, and the city is astir because they see this is Naomi. Can this really be Naomi after all these years? And so the women rush out to her and say, Naomi, it's you, you're back. And Naomi says, look, I know my name is Naomi, but I don't want you to call me that anymore. I want you to call me Mara. Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. She says, because my life has become bitter. I have lost my sons. I have lost my husband. My only hope is to come back and sell our family plot of land because I have no way forward. My life is bitter. So Ruth at the urging of Naomi, goes out into the fields to glean the grain. Okay, so here's what happened. In the Old Testament book of Numbers, God commanded the people of Israel that when they were harvesting their fields, they should not harvest all the way to the edge, nor should they pick up every grain that falls. They should leave that for the poor to come along behind and pick up what's left over. It was their way to care for the poor. So Ruth goes out to glean in a field. And the Bible tells us that as the Lord would have it, she ended up in the field of a man named Boaz. Now, Boaz was a relative of Naomi's. He was somehow related to Mahlon, Ruth's husband. So he comes back from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, and he says to the workers, "Who's this woman?" And they tell her that she has been gracious to to Naomi. She has come and taken care of Naomi. So he says to his workers, "Nobody harm her and let her glean behind us. In fact, miss some stuff. Let her get more than she normally would." So Boaz shows this kindness to his relative. Let me back up a second. So that relative actually has a technical name to it. It's called a kinsman redeemer. We're going to talk a lot more about that. But Boaz is a kinsman redeemer for Ruth and Naomi. So Naomi sends Ruth out to the place where Boaz is threshing grain. And at the end of the evening, Boaz goes and lays down, covered up by his blanket. And Ruth does what we would consider to be something extremely odd. But in her day and in her culture, it was normal. She goes over to where Boaz is sound asleep, and she curls up at his feet and uncovers his feet from the blanket. This means that what Naomi is doing is she is asking Boaz to cover her with the corner of that blanket, to take her into his family, to perform what the kinsman redeemer was supposed to do, to take care of her. So Boaz wakes up in the morning and says, "Who is this?" "Oh, it's Ruth." And she says, "Yes, you're my kinsman redeemer." He says, "Look, I will redeem you. I will buy the land. I will redeem you. But I'm not the closest relative. There's somebody closer than me. So I've got to go talk to him." So Boaz goes to the city gates. That's where all business was taken care of. He invites all the elders of the city. This guy comes, this other relative who's closer to Naomi and to Ruth. And Boaz says, "Look, Ruth and Naomi are back. They need a kinsman redeemer. Would you buy the field that they're going to sell? That's been in their family, but they have no choice." He says, "Yes, I'll buy the field. I'll do it." Then Boaz says, "But you also have to marry Ruth. And you have to carry on Mahlon's line and have children with Ruth so that Mahlon and that Elimelech's line does not end." Well, the kinsman redeemer, the closest relative, says, "Well, I don't think I want to do that because I might endanger my own estate. My kids will get less." So Boaz says, "Okay, I'll do it." And the other relative says, "Great, have at it." And he does another weird thing to us. He takes off his sandal and he gives it to Boaz as a pledge to say, "You go do it." All the elders say, "Yep, Boaz, we've worked this all out. You do it. God bless you, Boaz. Have at it." So Boaz marries Ruth, buys the plot of ground, takes Naomi into his house. And by God's grace, Boaz and Ruth have a baby. And his name is Obed. We're going to get to why that's important in just a minute. So we have this amazing story of Ruth being redeemed by Boaz. Let me tell you why this points forward. We're going to talk about our God in three ways this morning. We're going to talk about the fact that our God is a God of outsiders. Our God is a God of outsiders. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. We have Naomi, okay? I mean, there's a lot going on in this story. I can't cover it all, but we have Naomi, She and her husband and her two kids leave the land of Israel, leave the people of God, to go to a foreign land where they weren't supposed to mix. Her sons marry Moabite women. When the famine ends, she turns around and comes back to Israel. Now look, God is a God of outsiders. He does not say to Naomi, "Where have you been? You think you can just wander off and come right back?" That's not how this works. God instead welcomes Naomi back into the community and brings out of her an ancestor of Jesus. This is an important point for you and me, okay? Because not only are we talking about how Ruth and Boaz and Naomi point forward, we're talking about how you and I point to Jesus in our lives as well. Here's why this is an important point. God does not care how long someone has been away from the church or the faith. He does not care. He is a God of outsiders. He is a God who welcomes back people who wander from the fold, who leave the flock, who leave the church, who leave the faith. He is a God who welcomes them back. And he not only welcomes them back in a way that says, "Well, I will tolerate you." He welcomes outsiders back in a way that says, "Come on, come to my table. Be part of my kingdom. I've got a role for you to play." That's Naomi the outsider. Now, Ruth is really an outsider. She's not a Jew. She didn't grow up in the house of Abraham. She can't trace her ancestry back there. She is an outsider with different gods from a different land. But God is a God of outsiders. And he welcomes her into the kingdom and provides Boaz to care for her. And out of Ruth is a very important thing. If you don't have to turn with me to this because we're only going to be in here for a second. But I'm going to be in Matthew chapter 1. There's no page number on my Bible. 783. You don't have to turn there if you don't want to, if you just want to listen. Matthew begins his gospel with the genealogy of Jesus. We're not going to read the whole genealogy, but we're going to read the very first part. And here's what it says. This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, son of David, son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. God is a God of outsiders. He brings people into his kingdom who don't have any right there, who don't deserve to be there, but as I said before, he doesn't just tolerate them, he welcomes them in, and he takes this Moabite woman, and out of her, he continues the line that eventually leads us to Jesus. God is a God of outsiders. You and I know that from personal experience. But Jesus is a God of outsiders in the fact that he welcomes people to the table. He welcomes them to the kingdom, and he gives them a role. If we read the Gospels, we see it all the time. He's touching lepers. He's eating with tax collectors. He's talking to women. He's hanging around with sinners and the rabble of the society. God is a God of outsiders. Jesus loves the broken. The second thing we have to talk about now is this idea of kinsman redeemer. God is a God who redeems. God is a God who redeems. So let me explain this concept of kinsman redeemer. I'll try to do it as quickly as I possibly can. There are three things that are essential for someone to be a kinsman redeemer in the Bible. The first thing that is essential is that they have to be part of the family. They have to be a blood relative. Okay? So Boaz had to be related to Naomi and to Mahlon to be able to be a kinsman redeemer. This is of unbelievable importance to us. Folks, this is why we have Christmas. Because Jesus comes to be related to us, to be part of our family, to be blood and flesh just like us. He comes to be in our experience. He comes to be part of our family. He comes to be close enough to us to learn how to walk and talk and read and do all the things we had to do. He is exactly one of us. He is a kinsman. He's flesh and blood just like us. People who study the Bible, and I'm going to loosely put myself in that category. People who study the Bible have a word for what we talk about when we study Jesus. We like to say it because it sounds fancy. It's called Christology. Christology. It's the study of Christ. I like to say it because I think, hopefully, you'll think I'm smart. So if I say Christology, no, didn't work, huh? You still don't think I'm smart. All right, I got it. Look, there's a lot about Christology I don't understand, but I believe it, and I thank God for it every day. Because Christology says that Jesus is fully human. He's part of our family. We are part of his family. We are linked by blood. He is close enough. But the other side of Christology says that God is able to do what we need him to do. So the second part of being a kinsman redeemer is you have to be related by blood. The second part is you have to be able to do the redeeming. If Boaz could not afford to buy the land and take on another wife, he could not have done this. You have to be able. That's where Christology comes in play. This is not just our flesh and blood. This is different than us as well. It is completely our flesh and blood, but Jesus is different as well. He comes perfectly in power, in grace, in glory. He leaves the throne of the Father and comes into our world, so he is able. He's able to redeem us back. He's able to pay the price for my guilt and shame. He's able to pay the price for your mistakes and sins. He's able to do it. He can pay it all. So a kinsman redeemer has to be part of the family. And he has to be able to do what needs to be done. But the third part is where the story at the gate comes into play. A kinsman redeemer must be willing to do it. So the closest relative to Ruth and Naomi was another man. And he was close enough. He had the means to do it, but he was not willing to do it. He said, I'm not going to jeopardize my estate. I'm not going to jeopardize my kids' lives. I don't have the heart for it. So Boaz steps in. I mean, look, I told you last week I'm going to be telling you some really obvious things. It's obvious that Jesus is our flesh and blood. It's obvious that Jesus can and is able to redeem us. But the most beautiful, glorious thing about it is he is willing. He is willing to love people who are barely, when they're at their best, are barely tolerable. To love us when we're the worst. To take people who are unlovable and die for them and rise for them and pay the price for them. He is willing to do it. Our God is a God of outsiders. Our God is a God who redeems. And finally, our God is a God of hope. When Naomi got to Bethlehem, she said, please don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. Call me bitter, because I've lost all hope. I've lost everything that gave me hope. I lost the security of a husband. I lost the security of sons. I've lost standing in this community. My only hope is to sell this little plot of ground that we have. That's it. That's all I got. I have no hope. My life is bitter. But God brings hope through a kinsman redeemer into the lives of Ruth and Naomi. If I could describe the people that I meet, the world around us in one word, the word that I would use is hopeless. People are hopeless. They've put their hope in so many things, and they've been disappointed again and again. They're hopeless. I was reading an article this week, and I just want to share, I'm not going to share the whole article, but I'm going to share three quotes from it, because they're from people you've probably heard of. It was actually an article about the danger of the crowd. In other words, getting adulation, and how that's dangerous to anybody, but especially to pastors. But here's what this said. Here's a guy you may have heard of. His name is Jim Carrey. You know Jim Carrey? Here's what he said. He said, "I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see it's not the answer." Here's another guy you may have heard of. You may not like him, but you may have heard of him. His name is Tom Brady. Here's what he said. "Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me?" I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, "Hey, man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life." Me, I think, man, it's got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27. And what else is there for me? The last one is a famous actor. You may or may not have heard of him, Anthony Hopkins. He, in his indubitable way, sums it up beautifully. Here's what he says. "You know, I meet young people and they want to act and they want to be famous. And I tell them, when you get to the top of the tree, there's nothing up there. Most of this is nonsense. Most of this is a lie." There's a lot of people walking around us, maybe ourselves as well, who think if they could just get the right job, if they could just get the right spouse, if they could just get into the right college, just have the right kind of health, then they think they could make it. But the truth is, everything about it disappoints. If you think you're going to have the perfect family, you're going to be disappointed. If our hope is built on our circumstances, we've got nothing. But into that kind of lifestyle, into that kind of hopeless existence, comes a kinsman redeemer who says that no matter what your circumstances, I will buy you back. No matter how long you've been an outsider, no matter where you have been, I will buy you back. Who says of all the things in life that will disappoint you, I never will. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, that one of the great joys of having grown children is they teach you stuff. And how Chris had sent me a song that I really have come to know and love. Well, Adam does the same thing, and he sent me a song by a group called the Rend Collective. And it's called "Weep With Me." And the point is someone going through a difficult time says, "Lord, I believe that you weep with me." But one of the most powerful lines in that song is this: "What's true in the light is still true in the dark." And here's what that means. When you and I are here on Sunday morning and we're eating the meal, and we're filled with faith in who Jesus is, when we sing the songs, that second song today, I mean, it's your breath in our lungs. When we get together in fellowship, when we hear the Word of God and everything seems so clear because we're standing in the light, But the fact of the matter is this, when you go through darkness, when I go through darkness, it's still true about Jesus. What's true in the light is still true in the dark. And my friends, that's where true hope comes from. Not from our circumstances. And I pray your circumstances improve if they're not great. But it comes from the fact that we have a kinsman redeemer who loves outsiders and who brings us hope. Part of the series, though, is not just looking at Old Testament people and then looking at Jesus, but it's looking at how we point forward. If you can be a person of hope and grace, if when people tell you their struggles and heartache, you can lead them to Jesus, say, look, let me tell you what helps when I'm feeling down. When you can lead them to a kinsman redeemer who loves them whether they've been around or not. When you and I can point to Jesus, we can bring hope to a world around us. We have a God who loves outsiders. We have a God who redeems outsiders.